Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. We don't have a sponsor anymore.
Well,
you say that. We're obviously disappointed, but our listeners will be rejoicing and they don't have to listen to us go through that for contractually obliged 1 minute of chat about shaving our downstairs areas.
Was it because I said the weed whacker was crap?
They haven't renewed. That's all I know, Ian. They've not been in touch. And I said, it's wonderful doing business with you. Let us know if you want any more. And I've not heard back. So say what you want about them now. You nicked yourself a couple of times, did you?
No. Sorry. Oh, God, I. Yeah, that thing's ferocious. I am a delicate little flower, though. So there is that. Yeah, no, but I can't bad mouth them too much. What if they come back?
I have to tell them when I mention them. I have to give them the timestamps. So I'm always very generous. I always skip the bits where we've where we were like.
Right, tell you what, then. Right, the aftershave was honking.
I don't think it's a good idea to have a ball deodorant that's the same fragrance as the aftershave.
I hadn't noticed that, but also, right, the dispensary method for the ball deodorant. Because it's like a cream, it kept on clogging up at the top. It was crap. They should sort that out.
Yeah, if they sort that out, they can sponsor us again. Those are our terms.
Take it or leave it.
Anyway, I'm joined this evening by Craig Manson. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening. How are you doing?
And we've also, as you've heard already, we've also got Ian here with us. Good evening, Ian.
Hello.
If you're listening to us, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Where else are we? Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all the places you can get your podcast apps. We're also broadcasting live at the minute on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. So if you're watching along, please feel free to get involved in the comments and we'll pick out the best ones. It's a Lions podcast tonight. I suppose we should just go straight into the jingle, really.
Yeah, thanks.
It's the Legally Mandated Lions Chat, the Legally Mandated Lions Chat. We've heard so much about it that it makes us sick, but we've still got a chat about who Gatlin's gonna pick.
Yes, so tonight's all about the Lions because as far as we know, there still is no Scotland tour going ahead at the minute. There's been no updates on that, has there?
Have either of you seen?
No. So the Romania game's been cancelled. Whether or not the Georgia game goes ahead, given that the Georgia squad now have coronavirus, is also up in the air.
Is that scheduled for the 24th? Or?
I think so, yeah. There's still time.
Yeah.
But there's also a chance. There's also talk of the fact that the Lions might play Georgia this weekend.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Would it be proper we'll Georgia, or would it be like Tonga v. the All Blacks, Georgia?
I think we're probably talking Tonga v. the All Blacks, Georgia.
Yeah. There's four down or something like that.
Should we start with coronavirus and then we can end up on happier things of the two games that have been so far. So today, it was, as we're recording this, it was announced that four members of the Lions squad have tested positive for coronavirus. They haven't named them, but I think you can guess who it is by who was taken out the squad.
The 7-1 split on the bench. Yes.
They're all backs, obviously. There are also coaching staff. And again, they haven't named the coaching staff, but Gregor Townsend wasn't there tonight, so I assume he's self-isolating. So there's coronavirus in the Lions camp. There are four members of the Springboks gone down with it as well, I think. Plus four members of the Georgia side that played the Springboks at the weekend. So it's, I mean, Craig, it's maybe not surprising that coronavirus has hit the tour because it was probably inevitable from the start.
Yeah, it was going to be inevitable, wasn't it? As, the only issue I have is the fact that they're there at all, really, if you look at the all of the build-up and how rife coronavirus is within South Africa. It was, you know, if we shouldn't be surprised that anyone is, you know, that we're catching, you know, people are testing positive. Even because if you think about a hotel and you've got this bubble in the hotel, but you've got all the staff coming in and out, and it's, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's been some talk in some circles about whether this should have gone ahead at all. But given that, you know, the other alternative was to not play it at all or have it in the UK, but we've had coronavirus impact the Euros. I mean, Billy Gilmore got it after just spending 5 minutes in a tunnel with a couple of lads after the England game. So it's,
or
maybe
Eddie, or was that just an English conspiracy to take him out of the equation?
Yeah. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's right that the tour's gone ahead.
I'm not sure. Well, I mean, one of the sort of early contingency plans was to play at a neutral, less riddled area, I think would be the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Because you know how tight Australia have been about it, especially the, you know, if you've seen any of the entitled narcissistic whiny tennis players when they had to complaining about staying in the hotel for a fortnight. It's like, you're in like first class accommodation. It's not whinging. Should have gone ahead, I'm not too sure. Because, you know, we've seen South Africa's now had its third big wave. I mean, let's be fair, Britain is currently in another wave if the number of cases keeps going up. Did, I think Glasgow recorded, I'm not sure if it was Glasgow or Scotland, but recorded its highest number of daily cases just last week, like last Thursday, I think. So I'm not sure if it was wise to go ahead, or certainly, you know, cut it down to just the test matches. Because South Africa haven't had much time to warm up either, so it would have been maybe a little more fair. You know, if both teams haven't had long to gel together and they just sort of throw it all out, you know, maybe.
But I wonder, the thing is though, I wonder how much of this is down. You wonder how long ago they signed the agreements with South Africa to play in South Africa, and how long ago they signed the broadcast deals. Because you imagine these things aren't agreed in the run-up to it, are they? They're agreed a couple of years in advance. So you wonder whether or not, what the reason they're out there is because they're contractually obliged to be out there. And if they're not out there, Craig, then someone has to foot the bill.
Yeah, there was no real doubt that the tour was going ahead because the broadcast rights are so valuable that both of the ruling bodies, whether it's the Lions or the South African Rugby Association, weren't going to let it not happen because it's worth so much money to them. So the reason they're out there right now is money. There's no doubt about it. You can be all romantic and, oh, it's for the pride of the jersey and this and that and the other, but no, there's no people, you know, there's no fans in the stands. They're not, the guys that are on tour can't go and do everything that everybody talks about what they do on tour. So really it's money that is the reason they're out there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's ultimately what professional sport's about, Ian. It's hard to get romantic about it.
Yeah, you know, there's wages to be paid. Thing is, like, you know, the people who have the broadcasting rights, the likes of Sky and all that, you know, you think they could maybe just show a bit of leniency, because it's not like they're short of a bob or two.
Rupert Murdoch to show leniency.
Yeah.
Christ, dear.
But I think his boys are in charge of Fox now, aren't they? And they're not as horrendously right wing, I believe. You know, puts them just to the left of Hitler. Yeah, but money talks. You know, like you said, there's people who've paid for sponsoring, particularly. You know, it's like we want to be the big sponsor of the Lions. This is massive. You know, it's going to be massive viewership. It's a wide-reaching platform. It's all whoring ourselves out. That's all. That's what the name of the game is now.
That's it. Speaking of whoring yourself, I've been enjoying the fact that the South African teams all have sponsors in their names. I think that's something we just need to get over ourselves with and just adopt in Scotland as well.
Bring it on.
Every time I see it, I keep thinking, is that a new South African franchise? And then I realise it's just the Sharks and the Lions, and they've just added a different sponsor to the front of the name every couple of years. Cell C sounds like it's a battery, but it's an mobile phone company, apparently.
Ah, is that the original Swahili name for the town? Oh, no, sponsor.
I was looking at the top companies in Scotland to see what the options were, but I wasn't sure that the Ember Scottish Widows was necessarily the way we'd want to go with that.
I was just waiting on the Wham Bar Warriors.
I didn't have a Hands in Rock, but now I've got one now because you just reminded me of something. Oh my word! Yes, I've got it. Right, okay, continue.
Good. Okay, keep that for later on. I was surprised. I was looking for that bit. I was looking for the top companies in Scotland. John Menzies is still about, but apparently they're an aviation company now. They don't sell newspapers. They do something to do with planes and oil lines. They've moved on.
Yeah, it's a distribution company now, and
you can't get a copy of the record from them anymore.
Absolutely, no, you can't.
Do you not see them at the airport? Like their names on the side of haulage trucks and stuff like that, maybe.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. There you go.
Yeah, things change.
Is that really what they... No, surely it's just a different company. It's like...
I don't know. We'll find out. If someone knows, is John Menzies or John Means... The John Means is in existence today.
Mingus.
Is that the same?
John Mingus.
Is John Mingus that's in existence today the same John Mingus that used to be on the high street? Let us know in the comments. We'll find out by the end of the podcast. Someone Google it for us, please. In terms of the game so far, then, the game that's just happened was absolutely mental because of coronavirus, we ended up with a 7-1 split on the bench. I don't think I've ever seen a game with a 7-1 split on the bench. I don't know where everybody ended up playing. I think Toby Faletau ended up at centre.
I think... I think from what I could see... The actual back row forwards that were on the bench actually became back row forwards, and they actually just swapped one for one. Because I know Itoje came on for Henderson, Simmons came off, and Conan came on. So I think they all kind of swapped around. I think the only person that really went into the backs was the actual back, which was Finn Russell, who looked fabulous at straight away again, you know, compared to our dear friend Mr. Farrell. But anyway, I'll get into that in a minute.
How do I do this? Do you want to talk about the Scottish players first and then we can talk about the rest? Is that probably the easiest thing to do?
Why the hell not?
Yeah, we are the Scottish Rugby Blog podcast.
Let's be parochial about this. So
let's be Premier Sports about it.
Let's be Wales Online about it. Someone's got to be for the Scottish players, Christ. So the players, you've done a nice bit on the blog, Ian. If anyone hasn't seen that so far, was kind of an assessment of how everyone's done so far in the first two games. Obviously, we've got three under the belt as we record this now. Ali Price wasn't expecting to play a full 80 minutes, I wouldn't have thought, Ian, but he did. I thought he did well tonight. He looked lively, got a turnover.
I put it out that how good his box kicking was against the Sigma Lions on Saturday, you know, gave Adams and Reece Samet a lot to chase. Today, I thought his exit, you know, his clearance kicks from the back of a ruck were outstanding. There was one, you know, when Sharks had the first period of pressure, I think he took it on pretty much on the try line and cleared it up to halfway. And then later, quite late on, there was one that was, you know, it was also one for Elliot Daly to chase, but it ended up bouncing at a touch. But, you know, it took the lines from their own half to the short 5 meter line. So I think he did very well in that respect. And I also think that, sorry, I've just seen your message, Cammy. Yeah, and he's played. He looks very sharp. You know, he's obviously playing behind a world class pack, so he is able to go and get that ball out quickly, quicker than DuPont, as you've often proven.
Yep.
No, and he's playing fantastically well. I don't think we could ask any more of him.
No, and he's bossing it as well, Craig. You know, you can see his communication's excellent. He's constantly talking to his forwards. He's constantly communicating with the backs. He looks confident, and we know, I think, you know, it's like any Scottish player, when the tails are up, they play well.
Yeah, he's for me, you know, I was a doubter when his name was announced as going, but I've got to say he's doing a great job. Tonight was he had a fabulous turnover just in the Lions 22 that they were under the pump quite dramatically, and he managed to get a turnover, and for a nine is exceptional, and he's doing a great job. That kick, just as you're saying, Ian, that kick that he punted down to into their 22, I think it was midway through the game, it looked like it was going to run. It was going to run still in, you know, into the dead ball area, and then all of a sudden it just took a wee hook and into touch, and it was fantastic. He's doing a great job.
And he was always looking for work as well. I mean, it was a shame. I think Will Greenwood is a bit harsh to say that Rory Sutherland or Ali Price had mistimed the kind of run onto Rory Sutherland's break, but I think that's just the nature of those kind of breaks. Yeah, the ball comes to hand or you overrun it, and it just was one of those things. I don't think you could blame him for it, Ian.
No, man, Suz was on full rhino mode there, wasn't he? Yeah, I thought he was brilliant when he came on. We'll get into the rest of the parts, but yeah, it was. I mean, obviously, you know, he's got all that momentum, and Price isn't sure. You know, we are talking about fractions of degrees here, you know, about when to release and when he came on to it. You know, he's just a wee bit unlucky, and he's played practically the full match. You know, I'm sure Hornito would have been onto that in a flash, but. you know, Price has played. He's played. I mean, that's like three full matches he's played now.
Yeah,
Out of four. So yeah, he's putting a shift in, and he's putting his hand up.
There were players on that park tonight after 60 minutes blown, and he wasn't one of them. And given how much rugby he's played, that's pretty damn impressive from a fitness point of view.
Yeah, even Duane was blowing at one point, and Ali didn't seem phased at it. So they're at altitude as well. So, you know, he's doing a great job. As I say, it was great to see Suz go for it and then frantically look around to see who the hell's coming with me, because this is ridiculous.
We talk about the front row then. I mean, Xander, I thought, had a good game. I thought Mako Vinopola, we kind of talked about Xander, well, talking about Mako Vinopola, but I think if you are made to belly flop in the scrum, then something's going significantly wrong, Craig. I mean, I don't understand the mechanics of the scrum, but I think if you can be made by your opposite number to do a belly flop, then...
I think it's one of those situations. It's visuals. It's painting a picture for the referee, and unfortunately, his number, his opposite number, the tight head, this Cell C Sharks tight head, was maybe we shouldn't have sponsored names in the rugby teams, because that's ridiculous to say all that. I think he was painting a very good picture for the referee with Mako. They came in the first 10 minutes, they came in and they looked like they were going to go all guns blazing the Lions front row, but the Sharks front row were fading just as connection was coming in, the pressure was coming in, which meant Mako was hitting the ground and had grass on his forehead within 10 minutes. I think Xander started to go into the old Xander way of putting his feet further back. Mako was doing it, but Xander was putting his feet back further back a little bit, and he got pinged for it a couple of times. But to be brutally honest, he sorted that out, and in open play, he looked very good, especially clearing rucks. He was very dynamic that way.
I thought the last scrum that Xander got pinged at, I actually kind of felt that was harsh. I think he was done for pulling it down, but when you looked at the way that they ended up in the bodies, it looked like he kind of bent his opposite number double, so he was maybe a little bit unlucky there as well.
Yeah, very much so. I thought the shark's loose head was hinging, to be perfectly honest. But again, it's one of those situations. If it's the referees tend to lean towards the attacking team's scrum for penalties. Which way is that going to go? They usually go with the attacking one. So it's just the way it is, you know. But
it's probably, I think, an element of sympathy as well.
Well, there is that as well. There is that, considering their main front rover away with the box, I believe.
Yeah. Sutherland then, Ian. I mean, like Craig said, I think when Tadhg Furlong and Rory Sutherland came on in the front row, it really the scrum was a completely different matter altogether. It was much stronger, and so I thought Sutherland had an absolutely fantastic appearance off the bench.
Yeah, as well as he's scrummaging, you know, there was that break we talked about. He counter rocked a couple of times brilliantly. You know, showed real ferocity. He obviously, you know, he's only had the 50 minutes in that Japan game when Japan were scrumming, they just wanted the ball in and out quickly, so he didn't really get to show his bread and butter, and he's still trying to get back to full fitness. But today, you know, he just went about his last sort of 20 odd minutes tearing about, carrying well, clearing out, doing these basics, had a couple of nice little sort of flick on passes as well on offloads. Every single Scot has looked pretty good, to be fair, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that front row that we ended up with, Craig, of Furlong, Owens and Sutherland looked like potentially, I know it's early days, but that's potentially the Lions' front row for the tests.
It's difficult. I think Cowan Dickey did a phenomenal job as well. I know we're talking about Scottish players at the moment, but he kind of comes into it. But I think don't get me wrong, Mako Vinopola has been a phenomenal loose head prop for a long time, but I don't know why he's on this tour, because he just did not look at all fit enough, strong enough, wanting the ball at all, whereas Suz jogged onto the pitch and made him look half the player that Suz was on the field within 5 minutes of him playing. Counter-rucked, fell over, got back on his feet, came back and counter-rucked again, and then they won the ball. You know, Suz was fantastic. And if people keep saying, oh, Wyn Jones this, Wyn Jones the other, then it's going to be between Suz and Wyn Jones. Furlong, you know, the scrummage of Furlong was just phenomenal as well. So very, very good looking scrummage. And I think you would be hard pressed not to see Suss start on the test, yeah. At least one of them.
Yeah. Next then, if we're moving backwards, it's His Royal Mishness. Gee, I mean, Christ, we should just take a moment just to...
That's when he played scrum half. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And he got that turnover where I don't even know, like, he just appeared with the ball in one hand from a ruck.
Yes. Oh, I mean, right, so let's talk about the one that certain pundits who will not be named, like the F in Voldemort or something. There's going to be pop culture reference. I've never read a Harry Potter book in my life.
Jeevan Stones, you mean?
Yeah, that.
Please.
Tom Curry did not have anywhere near as good a game as the Mish. He did one pretty good jackal, but... And he did
the
quite
turnover,
well for
the time
the
over he got on the line, he was off his feet.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So he got on there first, but then he flipped over. And Watson just came on and just like, once again, everything. He's such a complete rugby player. Yeah. I mean, I think, we sort of eulogise likes of John Jeffrey and what have you for winning the Grand Slam. But Hamish Watson is actually going to be a legend. He's one of the best sevens I've seen. And we've had a lot of very good sevens.
This will be his tour. This will be his defining moment, I believe. I think, I was listening to a conversation between Geach and who was he talking to? I think it was Nick Mullins. And he was talking about how they attacked in 1997, how they talked about they could never match the size and the ferociousness off the box front row in the box scrummage. So what they did was they brought along smaller props and played them low so that they had to try and keep their bulk from hitting the ground, and they couldn't do it, and they got parity on within the scrummage. That's what I think, that's where I think Hamish has got this ability. He's got power, he's got manoeuvrability, and he is going to really show the big lads within the Springboks a clean pair of heels.
Yeah, I mean, there was that tackle in the first game where he kind of gets his man and absolutely nails him and drives him back on the ball and then dumps him on the ground. It was just absolutely technically perfect. You know, lifted him, but just returned him to the ground in the perfect way. And you see those tackles go another way. Yep. And yep. Took his try really well as well, to a typical kind of bouncing off a couple of bodies.
It's just textbook.
Yeah,
it's textbook home side play. And did you see my brief interaction with Neil Back?
I saw a glimpse of it. Yeah,
yeah. So I'd just straight after Hamish Watson scored, I just wrote "too small" on Twitter, and obviously, you know, people who know me know that that was a dig at the people who said Hamish Watson being too small. But obviously, some people took it literally, and one person added Neil Back in it. So I just confirmed, like, look, I actually use you as, you're like evidence exhibit A as to why you don't have to be a big monster to be a good open side. That's the guy who went on three Lions tours and won a World Cup. And, you know, he was down with it. He agrees. Because he said, if you're good enough, you're big enough, is what he'd said. And it's true. And he is, Hamish Watson is good enough, and he is certainly strong enough.
We had this ridiculous point at the beginning of the game, the build-up, because obviously it was delayed slightly. We had this long build-up on the TV today, and I was just sitting saying, I can't believe these people are talking about this. They brought up and they talked about Simmons, Curry, and
Navidi.
Who was on the other side? Navidi. Yeah, Navidi, and
yeah, how, like, yeah, 188.
Yeah, and they're all, oh, this is what Gatlin's trying to do. He's going for a smaller back row. And I'm thinking, hold on a minute. So now, all of a sudden, it's your idea that is that working with smaller back rows. Watson's been there. What the hell do they think they're talking about? You know, it was a ridiculous point. And no disrespect to Sam Warburton, but he constantly goes on about Tom Curry. Curry this, Curry that, Curry the other. And absolutely ignores Mish. And I just think
Tom Curry tonight was utterly anonymous.
Yes.
Utterly anonymous. Absolutely. That wasn't quality opposition tonight. I mean, you look at the final score. I think the Lions defended at all well in the first half, particularly.
The last ditch stuff was all right.
It was. Yeah. It lasted, it was, but compared to the weekend, It was night and day. You know that period of time where they was it 32 phases that they saw or something on the line at the weekend. I don't think they would have withstood that kind of thing tonight. It just didn't seem as well organized. And Tom Curry just doesn't. You know, Hamish Watson makes it look effortless.
Yeah,
Tom Curry looked like he was trying too hard, and that's the difference.
Yeah, there was one point he jumped right. I mean, if he'd got there, it would be a good read, but he didn't. So instead, he created a massive dog leg, and it created a counterattack for the Sharks. Because I think they'd started; they were only on their own 10-meter line. But he went sprinting out, They floated the pass over his head, and that set them, you know, 40, at least 40 odd metres down the park. You know, if you are going to do that kind of defending, you have to claim the ball, otherwise you've just created a massive problem for your team. And so I think, to be honest, he did more bad than good today. He's offload for the Adams try, the second try the Lions scored. You know, he carried well and he offloaded nicely. I think that was the only good thing that I can remember him doing. So he's miles behind the Mish as far as, and Navidi can play seven as well. Because I still think Tyburn could and should be number six.
Yeah, I think there was a point in the commentary that towards the end where I think it was when Tom Curry went off and Will Greenwood turned around Sam Waterburn and said, "Tom Curry's had a quiet one. Any idea why?" And you're screaming, going, "Because he's massively overrated and he probably shouldn't be on the tour. That's why, because he's an above average seven in the Premiership, and that's it."
I think him and Sam Underhill pairing is what they need each other. I actually think Underhill on his own is possibly a better player than Curry. I think you give Curry a wee bit too much stick, man. He's a fine player, but people going on about, like, oh, he's world class, blah, blah, blah. He's not played long enough to prove himself world class, as far as I'm concerned. He's in that potential bracket.
Yeah, he also needs a big eight to work from. And Sam Simmons isn't a big eight. Sam Simmons is basically doing a similar job to what Tom Curry and Josh Navidi and Mish do. I think he needs a big eight to work off, and he doesn't have that just now. So he's just arrived on the tour. This is his first real game. You know, it's.
I know. I think the other thing is that England haven't had a seven for eight for years. So it's a bit like, you know, when we had two sixes for Scotland for years, and then all of a sudden we decided Chris Fusaro was the answer. Do you know what I mean? That's just, no offence to Chris Fusaro, but that was just because we hadn't had an open side in Scotland for years, so we needed something, anything looked better.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We've done Ali Price, I think, Craig. I think we've kind of done him justice. So,
yes.
Finn Russell next, just as Ian goes for a wee break.
Yeah, no, oh, he's back. Look at that. You mentioned Finn Russell.
Yeah, I've mentioned Finn Russell has appeared.
Say what now?
It's like Candyman. If you say Finn Russell seven times in the mirror, Ian appears beside you.
Yeah, do you mind his game against Ross in 92? I've got the video highlights right here. Skilled Dan Carter, sorry, then. Skilled Dan Carter.
But Craig, I'll start with you, Craig, and then we'll let Ian kind of wax lyrical. But again, he's a bit like Ali Price in that he looks the part, and I think he's one of the ones that maybe from the outside people outside of Scotland have doubted him. I think, and said, you know, he can be a little bit flaky. He's, you know, yeah, he looks good in the highlight reels, but can he do it on a wet night in Johannesburg? And he does everything you expect a fly half to do, and then some.
You know, the one thing, especially out of the game tonight, that I feel that Finn did a job was defence. His tackling tonight was fantastic. He was eager, whereas Owen Farrell, we can talk about him later, but his defence isn't as good as Finn Russell's. Finn, immediately, whenever he got the ball, he looked relaxed. You saw him sitting juggling. You know, he wasn't juggling, but he was playing around with the ball and spinning it on his finger while he was sitting on the bench, just chilling out, getting ready for the game. He was ready for that. And whenever he got the ball, that kick over to Elliot Daly, that chip over the head to Elliot Daly, was just fabulous. And yes, Owen Farrell can do that sort of thing, but it's far more prescriptive, whereas we need a little bit of magic from Finn, and he's looking he's looking a far more complete player, and I think that's what Racing have done for him. They've just given him that base, and then he's allowed to, his base level's higher, so he's then able to go on and do his magic things as well as be an incredibly decent player.
Yeah, and I think, like Craig kind of alluded to, Owen Farrell can do the kicks through and stuff, but he needs more space to do it, whereas we saw, especially at the weekend, Ian, that, you know, Finn Russell needs an inch of space to get off a kick, whereas Owen Farrell maybe needs a yard or two.
Yeah, and, you know, even if Finn gets that inch, he'll take it to the line and defenders just start getting scared and run away from him. So he ends up giving, creating himself more space. Yeah, he came on, as Craig was saying. I mean, there was, I've said on Twitter already about the tackle on Vincent Cock when he broke away. You know, if Russell slips that at all, he's away. Yeah. And said the Lions won a penalty. He put in three really good tackles and helped with another one.
Yeah.
But he looked really solid. And I think going to France, you know, we have mentioned that he's maybe a bit bigger than he was when he was up here. Even though I don't think they have Greggs in France.
No, there isn't, and there's a worldwide Haribo shortage as well.
No, I've heard about this.
Oh, my word.
Stockpile. But yeah, he's not got electric pace. Right. No, he's fleet of mind, not fleet of foot. Kind of like Zinedine Zidane. So you know, he creates that wee bit of space for himself just by being faster in the head. So he doesn't need to be lean and quick. So he's bulked up a bit and he's shown that he can defend quite well. I mean, he kicks well. His place kicking was excellent tonight.
Well, this is something Lowe said. I think Finn has shown the doubters that he can place kick pretty well. That instantly puts him in much closer to contention for the starting place in the test teams than it might have done in the past.
The thing is, right, the guy is about he's about an 85% success rate kicker. But the only reason he's not been doing it for Scotland is because we had Greg Laidlaw, who was fantastic, you know, one of the best place kickers in the world. I mean, I'm sure there was a year when he had the highest success rate. So now Finn's done it. I've, you know, obviously playing for Glasgow, I've seen him slot many important kicks. Probably the most important one was the 14-15 semi-final against Ulster. You know, he's already thrown a 25-meter skip pass to DTH van der Merwe to level the scores, and then he smacks over a penalty, the conversion from right on the touchline. So we know he's, you know, I mean, there's no phase in that guy.
Yeah.
If he's going to miss a kick, it's because he's executed purely. It's not because he's flaky or any of that nonsense that keeps getting peddled out.
I think also you've got to remember he's being coached on the Lions too by one of the best kickers in Lions history, and you know you're getting to that point, he's at that level, and then you get someone who'll just give him a wee polish while he's out in Lions too.
Yeah, was really interesting. You could see them talking a lot tonight when Neil Jenkins was on the pitch, that they were talking a lot about the kicks. Obviously he's passing on tactics and stuff as well, but you know, that'll do him the world of good.
But he looked really controlled as well. He was putting in these thunderous tackles, and then he was getting up and telling people where to be, and he was constantly on the move, constantly directing.
That was something that somebody put a video on Twitter the weekend. I don't know if you saw it. Was the and they stripped away all the other kind of crowd noise and stuff from the weekend, the pipe in the stadium, and it was just it was just him barking orders. And as much as we were talking about Owen Farrell being in the ears of his players. And maybe Finn does it better. He does it in more, rather than swearing and shouting at them, he's calling for the ball. He's telling them to, you know, you could even say, truck it up again, and calling for it and directing the play. And that's what you need from your 10, Ian.
Yeah, I think you see people arguing on Twitter about it. They say, oh, you know, someone like, who was it? Oh, Ian McKinley. It was actually, he was saying on, I saw this on Rugby Pass, but he was saying on, I think, Virgin Media and Ireland, you know, you want somebody with a cool head like Sexton or Owen Farrell at that point, and you're like, Owen Farrell, cool headed compared to Finn Russell, right? The man who, when Sia Khaleesi said, you know, he knew they'd won the World Cup final when he saw Owen Farrell looking absolutely frazzled just at the coin toss. So, I mean, this whole nonsense that Owen Farrell is somehow a more controlled and calm person than Finn Russell. We don't see Finn Russell he got sent off for that forearm charge, although I think that was harsh.
That was
against
harsh.
France. It was ridiculously harsh. Whereas, you know, Owen Farrell tries to decapitate people at times. That whole thing annoys me. Finn Russell is not a wild maverick renegade. People who peddle that cliche out. Obviously, I haven't seen him progress as a player. If he was that much of a problem, I don't think that the most, one of the richest clubs in the world would be employing him. So it's rubbish. And he has a great kicking game. He's got a good defensive game. I even thought on Saturday, some people said, "Oh, he played poorly on Saturday." I was like, no, he didn't. The Lions scored 8 tries. How can you say that they've played badly when it's mainly backs that scored tries as well? So everything's coming through him. And they were just constantly on the front foot because he would know when to play it short to like someone like Courtney Laws, who played very well, or Itoji. When that wasn't on, he could skip it out to Harris. Chris Harris would bloody fantastic.
Well, let's talk about Chris Harris.
Chris Harris.
Who knew that Chris Harris had a kicking game, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen him when he's playing when he was playing for Newcastle and playing for Gloucester. I've seen a couple of kicks come out of his hand because he's had that ability down the wing. But for me, Chris Harris is, how can I put this? He is someone who is thought of as a great journeyman player, but when he comes up to the international stage, he's ferocious, and I love his defence. If you watch his tackles, he's never getting his head on the wrong side. He's always, his tackles are tech. I get my son and say, "Look, watch, and show him how to tackle, because the guy can cover tackle. He can scramble defence. He is the full package. And I think this whole Farrell at 10 or 12 has been knocked on the head, and we know that Farrell's going to be a Wednesday game player instead of a test player. And these new bodies are going to come in, and we're going to see Chris Harris at least on the bench of a test team. Because I honestly don't see Farrell. I think it's an injustice to see other players put behind Farrell the way he's playing at the moment.
Yeah. And the thing with Harris, I suppose, Ian, is that Daly has had a couple of good games, and I thought Daly was excellent tonight. He was one of the players that looked up for it. And I suppose there's an argument for them both being on the bench or starting, and that they can both have that versatility. So it's maybe no bad that you've got those two options, and you could start one or the other, and it really probably wouldn't make much difference.
I think Harris's defence is much better than Daly's. I mean, thing, I like Daly, and I do think his best position is outside centre. In a creative sense, defensively, I don't think he's fantastic, but I don't see him as a fullback at all, because, if you look at the way he runs, he's not like a Stuart Hogg or even, God, Mike Brown or Liam Williams, somebody who can spot that gap and swerve through. He's more of a sort of straight power runner. And he's got good speed, and that's why he played all three tests at the wing. Sorry, I keep flicking over to the Denmark-England game. At the corner line. And I thought he played very well, but Harris is different. Again, Craig was saying about his defence. There was one point when the Sigma Lions had that phase of pressure that lasted for God knows how many phases. He was in to assist. If Watson had missed a tackle, he was going to be in to assist, but obviously Hamish Watson does miss tackles. But he was in. And then, 10 seconds later, he's 20 metres over the other side of the pitch making a tackle that can stop a try, or at least a break. I saw that Ugo Monye apparently believes Elliot Daly is a surefire test starter at 13. No, not at all.
No.
At starter tour, I would have maybe thought it could go Farrell Henshaw. Like we've been saying, if we're picking on form, Farrell shouldn't be playing on a test team. Well, obviously there's still a couple of games to go, but it would be, can you imagine Henshaw and Harris as a centre partnership? You're not getting through that. They will absolutely smash you into bits.
You wonder, Craig, we mentioned that, he's seen as a bit of a journeyman, Chris Harris, and a late bloomer is also probably another way of putting it, that this is a guy who's had to work hard to get where he is, and he's taken every chance that he's been given. And you wonder how much that plays into the mindset of somebody like Chris Harris, that, you know, the guys that come out of academies and you've always had your rugby given to you and you've always been kind of touted as the next big thing, but there's a bit of kind of doggedness and a bit of, I don't know, like kind of two fingers up to everybody else with Chris, the way Chris Harris plays. And he's absolutely relentless.
Yeah, I think also, you know, because of his background, of how he's come into the game, I don't think there's a huge amount of pressure on his back. And I think he's able to go, you know what, I'm going to show you, because the worst I can do is do what I did for my first game against for Scotland and get the absolute, because I gave him pelters when he after the end of that game, and who knew? But then again, he wasn't a winger. He's obviously an outside centre, and I think just as you say, if you look at Aki tonight and you look at Farrell tonight, both of them were trying to tackle high and they were missing tackles, or they were passive tackles. They were going backwards. They were never putting positive tackles in. But if you think of Henshaw and Harris in defence, you're looking at an incredibly strong defence. So, you know, I think Harris, I think it'd be a travesty if he wasn't on it, at least on the bench for a test.
Yeah. Doohan then is a strange one, because at the start of the tour I had Doohan pegged as a Tommy Seymour. He's a perennial midweeker on the Lions tour, just to, you know, probably top try scorer, although Josh Adams taken that crown already. But there's some sneaking suspicion about me that Doohan might squeeze in there. He's going to push it all the way for the test team, Craig.
Yeah. Very much so. I think there's only one doubt in my mind with Doohan, and that's in the air, catching a high ball. And I know people are saying, oh, you know, that's it, you're jumping on the bandwagon with that. But if you do watch him, there are times he is a bit mince when it comes to catching a high ball. But when it comes to the rest of his game, you look at that, Farrell kick through in space, I'll have to give him that. But that try tonight... he had the wherewithal to put the speed on and then actually then control the ball and get it and dot it down to get the try. He's always there ready. He's an ideal winger. When you look at that daily tip on, he was ready for that ball. He knew that ball was coming to him and he had the space in front of him. He's always looking for the ball. He's always shouting for the ball. So I think he'll be... The only concern is the back three of Rhys Sammet and Adams. Adams has got to be 100%. There's no chance that someone who scored 8 tries in the first 3 or 4 games is going to not go on a test team. But Sammet looked quick tonight when he's got the ball. The only thing I would maybe say with Sammet is if you're going to get a few big lads that hit him quite hard, Koch looked ferocious tonight, and if he gets a few of these guys hitting him hard, I think he could be, he might not have the durability that maybe Doohan would, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I think watching it tonight, Ian, I think that Rhys Sammet looked more shaky defensively than Doohan, and looked a little bit more shaken with some of the big hits and a bit more panicky than Doohan.
Yeah, I mean he's got gas to burn and then some. But you know, he is a young lad. He's not used to that, as Jim Hamilton would love to see, physicality. Yeah, he is, and he is. You know, he will get smashed on this tour, and it'll be a part of a learning process for him. But this thing is going to be so hard to pick the winger. I mean, Adams should be nailed on, I believe. Obviously, Hogg is going to be the man at 15. It's automatically assumed, particularly in certain quarters, the English press, that Anthony Watson would be on the other ring. But you know, they have to prove themselves. Doohan has certainly proven himself to be capable. That moment in the first half when he's taking the ball on his own 5-meter line, held 2 men up, and then offloaded to Josh Adams to set a counter-attack. That's just incredible strength, man. You cannot, you know, Liam Williams, Elliot Daly, Any other winger couldn't do that. They don't have that strength. He is an absolute unit. And then it got to the point, I mean, there was, I think just before his hat-trick, the Sharks fullback was chasing back on him. And he's like, rather than try and tackle him like normally, he just flung his arms around him like, I know he just offload, so I just have to grab him and try and stop it offload. The man is just an absolute tank. And it's such a weapon to have. And, you know, he's playing himself out of contention. He's played, what, 12 international games now, and he's got 12 tries. 8-10 for Scotland, 4-2 for the Lions.
I wonder whether or not if you get someone like, if you get Russell playing 10, Craig, that improves Doohan's chances, because Russell for Scotland particularly will drop back into the field in defence. So a bit like we've said before with Darcy Graham, for example, you don't have to have a winger that drops back and takes a high ball in defence if you've got other options who can move back as well.
Yeah. That's true. But again, this is one of those situations where Doohan has to prove himself with other players within the team. And I guess that's why tonight was a bit of a non-game for the Lions, because they couldn't play the groups of players together that they wanted to see what their systems are going to work like. Because I think, you know, for Doohan to be in the test team, he has to play off bigger, he has to work with the tens that are, what's the word? He has to work off all the tens. And I think if he works, does his best to work as hard as he can to get that ball and shout and scream for it and ask for it as much as he possibly can, then I think he's got, just as you say, he's going to play into the test team. But I think, just as you say, you cannot turn around to me and say to someone, a winger that gains 5 metres in every contact is not worth his weight in gold. He will do a great job if we can get him into a test team, but I don't know if it's definitely going to be a Finn related or not.
Hogg then, Ian. There's still a lot of people not in Scotland, that has to be said, who don't think he's nailed on 15. But I mean, that was a pretty assured performance on Saturday.
Very, very good. You could see there was two high kicks to him early on, which he took brilliantly. The second one, I thought there's no chance he's cut. I thought he'd misread it completely and had no chance, but somehow he held on to his fingertips and recycled the ball well. He showed the typical dancing feet. Even if he got into traffic, he was able to sort of twinkle toe around and you know, present the ball cleanly. There was the chase down tackle. He actually defended pretty well overall. Great energy. He's a cracking player.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, well, this thing, like, we just view him in sort of the back three options as solely a fullback. But of course, he can play 10. he can cover positions. But he's best from the fullback position. He's one of the best fullbacks in the world. Let's just not, beat around the bush here. He's outstanding in what he does. He led the team to a convincing victory.
Yeah. Probably I think he's one of the players isolating at the minute then, Craig, because I think he was on the bench tonight, supposedly.
Yeah, there was no way that they were going to put the Mish or Talupe Faletau into the backs if Hogg was available. So he's got to be one of those people that's isolating. So it's a shame, but we all know how thirsty he is for this, because I don't think he's had a fair shout at Alliance test shirt, because of the first one was the accident, and the second one was the elbow to the head, and then the first time he was playing at 10, he was kind of used as a utility player in the first tour. So I think if we can, what's the word? I think he's ready for it, and I think he's going to absolutely work, because he's not going to have Gatland doing a Rob Baxter anyway to the press, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's, I think, have we covered all the Scottish players then, Craig? Ones that played
so far. I think we have, yeah, I think so. Seems like it, yeah.
Of the rest then, kind of your pick of the rest then, I thought Josh Navidi had a really good game tonight. I think he was probably man of the match for me, aside from the fact that the South African media decided to give it to Doohan, which I know he had a hat-trick, but can I only assume was a banter pick.
Oh, it has to be, because you know, if you look at the fact that Josh in the second game Josh Adams scored, got four tries, and then they picked Hamish Watson as well. So I think that's a whole thing of that we're not gonna give it to the person that everyone's talking about. But yeah, I think Navidi did incredibly well. I thought Itoje looked full on Itoje. And mm-hmm. I think he looked fabulous as well. I have to disagree with both you and Ian actually about Elliot Daly. I thought he had a kind of middle of the road game tonight. And I've never really been a huge fan of his. He's got a nice long stride, but there's no way he's a 15 like Hogg or even Adams at 15 tonight. I thought looked better than Daly. I think. Obviously, Adams, I think, is shining very, very bright. I've just forgotten the hooker's name. Cowan Dickey, I think, had an absolute. You know, there was one slow motion shot they played of him doing a chop tackle, and no wonder the guy gets knocked out on a regular basis because he was absolutely fabulous, and that's proper commitment. So I think. I would be very, very surprised to see his name behind Jamie George on a test sheet because I think he's playing Jamie George off the park just now.
Yeah, I thought actually that for me, the two players, it was who was in the lock? It was Adam Beard and Ian Henderson did okay, but a couple of times they just didn't look like they were up for it. And I know they were playing at altitude and I know it's difficult, but Adam Beard did well in the lineout, and I know that's what locks are there for, but you need them to do a bit more around the park. There was a noticeable difference when Itoje came on.
Very much so, yeah. And that's the thing, you know, you look at Ian Henderson is known for his footwork as well as being a good lineout option, and he goes forward quite well. He didn't show that tonight. But I think it's more the fact that the Sharks had a fairly rushed defence. So every time he got the ball, they had two men on him straight away and he wasn't getting the opportunity to step anybody or try and move the ball quickly. So I think he had an okay game, just as you say. But as I say, Itoje came on the field and just turned on Itoje. And he was off and he was fabulous tonight. I was really impressed with him.
Ian, who's been your picks of the non-Scots so far?
In contrast, I actually thought Henderson played well tonight. I thought he's very good. He's excellent over the ball. As another thing, you know, he's one of these kind of the 4-6 hybrids. For me, he was one of the. I'd have put him in my Six Nations team of the year. I think when I did a predicted. You know, if looking off the back of Six Nations, if I was going to pick a Lions 15, I had him and Alan Wynne-Jones together in the engine room. So I think Henderson is, and it's not just because he spells his name the same way as me. I do think he is a tremendous player. Obviously, he's had a lot of time injured. He's impressed. I thought Luke Cowan-Dickey was excellent today. You know, Jamie George, they on Saturday, they seem to have that long line out sorted, and George looked okay in that respect. He carried quite well, but I thought Cowan Dickey was just outstanding today.
Yeah.
Other than that, Ken Owens, who I'm a big fan of, I don't think he was outstanding. Henshaw played well in Japan. I'm just hoping that he can stay fit. I think he's a fantastic player. Aki is he's going to be a midweeker for me. He scored a try, and you know he's good and powerful. He gave away a cheap penalty. I just don't think he's, you know, compared to the other options. It's hard to pick anyone that's been particularly terrible. Macko Vunipola's been the worst so far. But obviously we still haven't had the chance to see the likes of Antti Watson, what have you. Ty Byrne, I'm a big fan of Ty Byrne. He played excellently on Saturday. he's another one that can do lock, back row, good over the ball, hard, carries well, and also an absolute thunderbolt of a left foot on him when needs to be. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think what's heartening about all that is when you look at how everyone else is going, that as far as we're concerned, and that's all that's important really, as far as we're concerned in Scotland, is that the Scottish lads are all there and thereabouts. And that's, you know, at this stage, after three games down, that's a good thing. And journalists and other, you know, and we'll get on the hands in the ruck of it, but, you know, other people can write whatever they want to write, but statistically and factually, Craig, I think, you know, it's hard to say that any of the Scots are already looking like midweek players. I think they're all looking like that there or thereabouts for test selection at the minute.
Yeah, there's not one Scottish player in the Lions squad that you can't argue against being a test player. Whether they are or not is a different situation. But I think they're all lending themselves to the way that Tooney's fingerprints are all over this Lions side, and I tell you, if they're successful in this tour, I would very much expect him to be the next lead coach for the Lions in 4 years' time. He's definitely made a Lions team look different to, you know, everyone keeps going on about we have to match the Springboks up front. Well, actually, Tooney's saying, no, do we really? And I like that. I really like that.
I was a bit worried that Warren Gatland had given Gregor Townsend COVID so he could lock him in his hotel room and stop all this offloading nonsense, but it was quite heartening to see that they'd... That's not the case, because they were offloading left, right and centre. And so it is, like Craig said, it is very much a... You know, the defence is a Steve Tandy defence. The attack's a Gregor Townsend attack.
Yeah, our footprints are all over it. No,
this is what happens when we've got good players to execute it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's hard for a small country like Scotland to produce 15 great rugby players, but, you know, we've not produced some of them, to be fair. But, you know, they're representing us. We've made them the players they are, and then they've got other great players around them. I've been reading, obviously, the, you know, Legacy of the Lions book, and there was like Brian O'Driscoll saying, you know, so just when you step up to the Lions, you're playing against guys who've, you know, they're just off the scale. You know, you're the best guy in your team. Then you meet these guys, and they're like, you know, even used the phrase, you know, you take your intellectual property. You know, these guys have got a rugby IQ higher than what you're used to. So it's raising standards, but also the guys we have in there, they are the ones who are pushing standards. You know, I mean, Christ, we've even got a Gallagher Premiership champion and European Cup winner who can't make the team in Johnny Gray.
Yeah.
So, you know, our guys that are there because they are damn good players, and so far they're shown.
Okay, let's do this then. Yes, it's hands in the ruck time or any other business section of the podcast, although saying that, all the submissions tonight are about the Lions on the group on our super secret Facebook page for our Patreons. Ian, you mentioned you had hands in the ruck. What's your hands in the ruck tonight?
Yeah, it's the new Racing 92 top.
Oh, Jesus, that's sore on the eyes.
Have you seen that thing? God, what's happened? It's like, is symmetry not allowed now?
That's a Finn Russell top. They have gone down the route of, going to have a Finn Russell top.
You know when the telly used to go funny? You know when the before digital, when the telly used to go funny? It looks like that.
It's like CFAX is broken because it's windy. I don't know if you'd call it my fashion sense, but sometimes I like stuff that just looks absolutely ridiculous. Like I love the Treviso top, you know, that fluorescent splash thing. I'm like, that's class.
Have you seen the Romania top?
I was just about to say the Romania top. I'm like, you know what, man? Well, I won't buy it, but I respect you for wearing it. I've got like you know, fluorescent coloured boots, and it's, I'm not even a fancy player anything. You know, I'm more of a hatchet man when I played five a side. But that racing top just gives me a headache because it's it would look kind of cool, but there's far too many sponsors on it. Why couldn't the Clarence one be at the back rather than right on the belly? And then there's bits that are like deep, like black borders on them. And then underneath the Nike swoosh, there's a red bit for no reason. The sleeves aren't, the stripes on the sleeves aren't the same. What the f- is going on there?
You dug up PM Mondrian and got him to design it.
Who?
Mondrian, the guy that used to do the paint. Does the paintings with the squares? I used to, he's dead now.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's like him and Jackson Pollock got together and made a supergroup.
Craig, what's your hands in the ruck?
For me, I used to hate Ronan O'Gara as a player. Absolutely loathed him, absolutely hated him. And I'm fed up of people berating him for his Sky punditry because I think he's an absolute blast. I've been loving every minute of him, and I was getting a bit upset on Twitter seeing people saying, "No, Roger's this, and oh, he won't answer. He can't answer a question, and he's blah blah blah, and he's this, and he's that, and the other." Some of the answers to some of the questions have been absolutely fabulous, and being a relatively junior coach and listening to a coach speak about the backline and the you know his actual breakdown of what's going on the game. I've loved every minute of it. So I want the haters to stop hating tonight.
He does look though like he's a traveling salesman stuck inside a travel lodge somewhere. The way they keep shooting across the city, he's like check shirt and he's beige chinos with his iPhone headphones in.
Did you see Daddy's washing hanging up in the hanging up beside him in the chair tonight? Daddy's shirt hanging up.
Stuff in the trouser press.
Now those are a thing of the past. Being the travelling salesman that I am, and the hotels that I have to visit, there's no trouser presses anymore. They're all gone.
Oh. People kept on burning themselves. That's
what. That's what it is. You have to be fine on saying this at 3 in the morning. Keep your kebab hot.
I can make 4 paninis in this thing.
We've had a couple of ones in on our super secret Facebook group, all Lions related. Martin Bell has a British and Irish Lions hands in the rock, or a Bill Hitra, as he calls it, which is pith helmets. Which is just...
Yeah.
It's not a great look, is it? You know, supporting the Lions against South Africa and going dressed up like Michael Caine in Zulu.
Oh, is that what I wasn't sure what pith helmet was?
It looks like a police helmet, but in khaki. it's one step away from a full Indian headdress.
I know.
You know, I just like I don't mind people showing the George Cross because that's the flag and they're proud of it. But when you add the George Cross, a pith helmet, or you know something else. Some other sort of colonial dress into it. It just makes you cringe, and I think it looks awful. He had a bloody. There was one boy who had a pith helmet on and a kilt.
Well, that was true. That was I think the Welsh regiments used to wear that. The lads with pith helmets and kilts on in Zulu.
Yeah, crazy.
Not that we should be using Zulu as any sort of celebration or reference for cheering against South Africa. To be fair,
exactly. Yeah,
the absolutely. Optics aren't exactly great.
I've never seen Zulu.
It's a good film. It's not the film that people make it out to be.
It's kind of
it's not a fun. It's not supposed to be a. It's not supposed to be a film about winning at war. It's supposed to be about the horrors of war.
Yeah.
It's like, look at how dreadful we are. Oh wait,
they get beat. That's it. Essentially, like in Zulu, spoilers, they get beat and they're allowed to retreat. That's how the film ends. They get absolutely annihilated and then they're allowed to retreat, and then the film ends.
Congratulations. And then
it talks about the absolute horrors that were then visited upon the people of South Africa by colonial invaders afterwards.
That's just not rugby culture. That's so just,
essentially the kind of people who like celebrate that are the kind of people who don't understand that Al Murray, the pub landlord, is, you know, there's irony in there. Oh, you jammy son of a...
Have England scored?
Yeah, penalty, which was looks like a dive to me. Penalty gets saved, but then...
Of course it's a dive, it's England. No, I'm not even watching, I can tell it's a dive.
Sterling kicked his own foot again. He Andy Robertsoned himself. and Schmeichel saved the penalty, and then Kane's knocked it in.
Oh, sad times. Sad times.
Dreadful times.
The big Colin Black says all the media, all of it, it's all pish, especially the pro Curry brigade, but more bizarrely the fact it's deemed possible that Hogg isn't even a nailed on starter. Owen Watson being a sure starter in the back three despite not seeing him play yet, too many hands in the ruck to talk about. I think enough's been said over the weekend about, I mean, particularly the Jeevan Stones 7 out of 10 for him, man of the match, Hamish Watson at the weekend. And 9 out of 10 for Courtney Laws, despite the fact that Courtney Laws cost the Lions a try because of a blatant neck roll. It's just...
How come Courtney Laws doesn't have to play against bigger opposition to get a 9 out of 10, but Hamish Watson does?
Yeah.
It's, man, he's just trolling out. I'm not even going to talk about the...
No. I think the thing for us, we've talked about in the past, and the Scottish players, we've said the Scottish players have to do more to prove themselves, but I don't know what more they can do now to prove themselves. I think they... The problem we have is that we have a small rugby media within Scotland, and the media that we have, I think, is very fair. In fact, probably veers towards being quite harsh about Scotland, sometimes quite down on Scotland. I don't know if that's just our culture, Craig, or whether or not it's, you know, the right way to go. Is that, you know, we on the podcast are quite critical of the Scotland players. I think the media in Scotland is quite, can be quite critical when things don't go our way. And we can be give cautious praise compared to Wales and England and even Ireland, where, you know, they won't hear a word said wrong about their boys.
Yeah, I think the issue we have is that we've had to, you know, I was only 16 when we had a Scotland team that were successful, or Grand Slam successful. We've endured a level of awful play for a long time as Edinburgh fans, as Glasgow fans, as Scotland fans. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, and we don't want to start dancing about and saying we're not going to. What's the guy that sang about winning the World Cup? Ali's Army and all this, that, and the other. We're not getting to that level as rugby fans. So, because we are, I think we value the underdog tag, but when it comes to the Lions, it's all about look how good I am. Look at me, I am fantastic. And I think that's where the juxtaposition is quite different. And I think we need a little bit more belief, and we need to stand up for ourselves a little bit more. I'm a great believer of our, as I say. The guys that are on the Lions tour at this moment in time, our Scotland team at the moment is fantastic, and the guys that are on the Lions team at the moment are absolutely fantastic, and I think they've got a good shout of being in the test teams, and yeah. We have to believe that.
Yeah. My hands in the ruck is there was a kind of video going around Twitter this week of an old, it was a Lions, I think a Ruck and a Lions game back in the 70s or 1993 or whatever it was of a ruck, and half of Twitter went, this is awful. This is what rugby used to be like. Just people falling all over themselves, and then there's a scrum. And people going, bring back rucking. This is amazing. And you watch the old games, and it's just so, it's not even the same sport. And I think what winds me up, I mean, even, I don't think, you watch the 97 tour, and, you know, John and I watched that for the podcast, when we did the podcast last year, and watched that documentary, even what the rugby that's played in 97, it bears more of a resemblance to rugby today than it did back in the 70s, but it's still a different game altogether. And that's the joy of rugby. So I don't think it's fine to reminisce about how rugby used to be back in the day, but to hold it up as, you know, this is what we should be aspiring to is utter nonsense, because it was, compared to today's standard, rugby was pish and a horrible thing to watch, and it was chaotic. And I mean, Chris, you didn't even get live Lions matches, I don't think, until the 80s. Before that, they had to ship the footage back in a bloody container ship. So you're watching it on, like, bloody players were back before you could watch the first match. Jesus, you know. So the only reports you got were some bloke pissed on port in bloody South Africa on the Telegraph expenses. Stephen Jones pissed on port in South Africa on the Telegraph expenses account. Talking about how amazing everything is.
The problem you have is it's like everything. Politics, it's like rugby, football, everything was better in the old days. Well, yeah, but we had cholera and we had all these different, we had diseases that we've cured nowadays. I think it's a bit of a joke nowadays. I think we are a modern people and we move on, and the rugby game has moved on, and let's just be happy about it, apart from obviously Rassin's new shirt.
That seems as good a note to leave it as any.
Rassin's new shirt? No, it's a terrible note at the end of that.
Go on.
Say something good. I don't know.
Well, look, I think we've been positive about Scottish players' chances in the Lions. I think it's probably the most positive podcast we've ever produced, Chris, in the 160 odd episodes we've done of it. We'll be back next week on Wednesday. If there might not be any rugby action that actually happens in the meantime, that's the problem. So we're intending on being back on Wednesday.
I've just spent £33 on a Sky
Sports. I've also spent it on that. My brother gave me his bloody login. It didn't work, so I spent money on it. So if you listen to this, Gaz, it didn't bloody work. So I had to spend you owe me £33.
See, then I've discovered that I have Sky TV as my normal television provider. So I could have got some kind of package with them. It's £18 a month, so I could have saved myself like £4. No. Or I might just go and watch the last test in the pub.
Well, because I want to sign up tonight, I've worked out that I've got enough coverage now until the last test. So I've got
I'm going to run out on the last test. 7th of August? Yeah, I think I'll run
out. Yeah, so I sign up today, so I should be fine.
I would stay out the pub just in case you get Scott Quinnell coming in with his microphone, and then you have to fake that you're actually enjoying yourself.
me and Scott will get on brilliant. I'll just snap his wallet at the same time.
That's a better note. Are you happy with that note to end it on, Ian? Scott Quinnell's fan van. Is that where we're going to end it tonight?
Me, Robin, Scott Quinnell. Yes, yeah, that's how we're going to end.
That's how we're going to end it.
I'll get it wrong about it. All right, big man. He's it. He's got the money, he can afford it. Although he'll be in Edinburgh, won't he? He'll be probably be in the Three Sisters or something. Me and my girlfriend won a pub quiz in the Three Sisters like the last time I was in Edinburgh, and then I lost the bloody they gave us like a £50 card thing to use in pubs that were owned by the same company, and I lost it on the way home.
Oh.
Was that in the queue, queue for the train to get home? Because it's usually a big queue for the train.
No, but we went there on like a Monday night. My mum had got us a BrewDog tasting thing, and I'd already done the one in Glasgow, and I was like, well, I've not been to Edinburgh for a while other than to go to rugby. Why don't I go to Edinburgh? And I hated it. Oh, yeah.
at least we didn't have beard oil dispensers in the bloody toilets like Luigi's do.
Have you been up at the West End?
I was going to say, Craig, that's not... Are you sure that's beard oil?
I'm not putting that on my face again. That's ridiculous.
Those rainbow flags are there all year, not just this one.
And on that note, we'll be back next week if there's any actual rugby played in the meantime. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much to Craig and Ian. It's goodbye from me and goodbye from the lads.
Ciao.